Everyone, so good to be with you tonight. Those of you that think back about last Sunday, you will recall that Sunday morning we talked a week ago about the incident where Israel sinned at Mount Sinai. That has to be one of the bleakest periods in Old Testament history. And yet, I want to talk about that again tonight because it also is one of the most interesting and glorious periods of Old Testament history because of Moses' intercession on behalf of the people. In fact, I want to look with you for a few minutes this evening at Exodus chapters 32 through 34. This is a section of the book of Exodus that sometimes gets neglected, or maybe sometimes people just don't really look at it in depth and really appreciate the magnitude of what's going on. But this is a tremendous occasion when Moses ascends Mount Sinai to beg God to please forgive the people of their sin, a people who have violated the Mosaic covenant that God had just shortly before given to them. I want to begin tonight by reading with you Exodus chapter 32, beginning with verse 9. The Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, they are an obstinate people. Now then let me alone, that my anger may burn against them, and that I may destroy them. And I will make of you, Moses, a great nation. Then Moses entreated the Lord his God. This is the beginning of the account of Moses interceding for Israel to God. And it is not an easy process that Moses is going through. In fact, there are three conversations that Moses has to have with God before God will finally and completely forgive the people and restore the Mosaic covenant the way that it had been before. And I think sometimes we don't appreciate that. In fact, when you look at these chapters, what you see is that Moses is going through extreme emotional effort to convince God. And that's the right word, to convince God to forgive the people and restore things the way that they were. In fact, when we look at the entirety of this section, we're maybe a little bit surprised at God, and that God has to be convinced by Moses. And the way this whole thing is presented maybe raises some questions to us. But there are some valuable lessons here. And I think we can learn some valuable things about God and some valuable things about Moses that can help us be better people. I want to talk with you this evening about this. Moses' intercession, as I said, there are three conversations that Moses has with God on this occasion. And the first of these we just began to read in Exodus 32, beginning with verse 9. And basically what you see here is that God has said to Moses, as God begins this conversation, here's what I'm going to do. I am going to destroy the nation completely. This is a nation, God says, whom I brought out of Egypt. They have rejected me and this covenant. And so I'm going to destroy them. They're an obstinate people. And they deserve to be judged. I'm going to wipe everybody out. And he says, Moses, I'm going to fulfill my promise to the fathers by making out of you and your descendants a great nation. That's the first thing God says. I will destroy the nation. That's my intention, Moses. And Moses begs God not to do that. Verse 11, then Moses entreated the Lord his God and said, O Lord, why does your anger burn against your people whom you have brought out from the land of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand? Why should the Egyptians speak saying, with evil intent he brought them out to kill them in the mountains and to destroy them from the face of the earth. Turn from your burning anger and change your mind about doing harm to your people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, your servants to whom you swore by yourself and said to them, I will multiply your descendants as the stars of the heavens, and all of this land of which I have spoken, I will give to your descendants, and they shall inherit it forever. Do you see how Moses is arguing with God? He's trying to convince God that destroying the nation and raising up a new nation through Moses and his descendants, that's not the best thing. Don't do that. Don't bring such utter judgment and destruction upon these your people, Moses says. And he gives another argument. He says, the Egyptians are going to think badly of you. They're going to think that you brought these people out of Egypt just to murder them. And you don't want that kind of blasphemous thought to be perpetrated among the Egyptians. And finally, he says, remember Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, whom you loved and whom you swore by yourself that you would bless them and you would bless their descendants and you would give them this land and you would multiply them as the stars of heaven. Don't now take this multitude that you've created and then wipe them out and start all over again. He says, don't do that, please, Lord. Please show mercy to these people. And the text says in verse 14, a remarkable statement. So the Lord changed his mind about the harm which he said he would do to his people. The Lord changed his mind. You know, there are other passages of Scripture that state seemingly just the opposite about God. That our God is not like a human being. He does not change his mind the way human beings vacillate back and forth. And yet what you have here is God in his righteous wrath and his righteous indignation listening to Moses, and the text presents him as being willing to be persuaded and convinced by Moses, this man who was interceding on their behalf. Centuries after this incident, as recorded in 1 Samuel chapter 2, the great high priest of Israel would say these words, if a man sins against the Lord, who can intercede for him? Pretty good question. If a human being sins against other men, he'd said, well, you can find some intercessor who can plead their case effectively. But if a man sins against God, well, who can possibly intercede on their behalf before God? Moses did on this occasion. Moses did. The Lord listened to him. And the text says that God changed his mind about the harm that he said he would do to Israel. Now, that's just the first conversation. Now what we see in Exodus chapter 33 and the first 13 verses there is a second conversation that God has with Moses. And what we see on this occasion is that God makes it clear, you've convinced me, Moses. Yes, I'm not going to destroy the people. I've been persuaded by your words and because of your compassion on them. I will show them compassion, but we see in these verses, God says, though I will not destroy them, I'll let them live, but I will not go with you to Canaan. Let's look at these verses. Exodus 33, verse 1. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, depart, go up from here, you and the people whom you have brought up from the land of Egypt to the land of which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, to your descendants I will give it. I will send an angel before you, and I will drive out the Canaanite, the Amorite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Go up to a land flowing with milk and honey, For I will not go up in your midst, because you are an obstinate people, and I might destroy you on the way.
That's a pretty powerful statement, isn't it? Do you appreciate what the Lord is saying?
Now, keep in mind why God brought them to Mount Sinai in the first place. The very first thing God said to Israel when they first arrived at the base of Mount Sinai, Exodus 19 records it, He said, I'm going to make a covenant with you that will make you my special people. And you will be my special people and have a relationship with me that is unique, that is an intimate, personal relationship that I sustain with no other people in the world. That's what the Mosaic Covenant was all about. In fact, that's the reason why Moses had gone up to the top of Mount Sinai for those 40 days and 40 nights, because he was, first of all, obtaining the two tablets of the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, which represented that covenant of Moses that God was establishing between him and Israel. But also the reason why Moses was atop the mountain for those 40 days and 40 nights, what caused Moses to be up there so long that it caused the people to say, well, what's happened to him? Let's make this golden calf. The reason why he was up there for 40 days and 40 nights is because God was giving him instructions about the tabernacle so God could go with them to Canaan. And his presence would be in their midst. And that's exactly what the Mosaic Covenant was talking about. God says here, Moses, you've persuaded me not to destroy this people. I'll let them live as a nation. And I will honor my promise, my covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that I would give their descendants this promised land. I will honor that. I'm not going to go back on my word. I would never do that, God says. But I'm going to send my angel with you, and my angel is going to be the one who'll drive out the Canaanite people from the land so you can obtain possession of it. But he says, my presence is not going up there with you. If I did go with you, you are so obstinate, I would destroy you along the way. Once again, God's being presented here like he's just a human being who has real feelings, doesn't he? Isn't that the impression that you get from all this? God's emotional, like we are. God has real feelings, like we are. And he says, I'm not going to go up there with you. Folks, what this means is no Mosaic covenant. No sanctuary. No tabernacle that God can dwell in their midst and travel with them to the promised land. If there's no sanctuary and none of the Mosaic rituals there that the Mosaic covenant was based on, there's no Mosaic covenant. There's no special relationship that God is going to have with Israel that he doesn't sustain with other nations. Every other nation who was living in the land that they were living in essence, God gave them their land. God is saying, all right, I'll give that land of Canaan to the seed of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to this nation of Israel, but I'm not going to go up with you. There's no Mosaic covenant. I'm not going to dwell in your midst. And the people got that. In fact, in verses 4 and following, what you see is the people go in mourning. And they demonstrate their mourning by taking off their ornaments and showing those outward signs of mourning. And in fact, verses 7 through 11 emphasize what this meant, that here Moses would be going with the people to the land of Canaan, but God was not going to be going with them. And verses 7 through 11 talk about how Moses would have that special intimate contact with God all the time they were at Mount Sinai. And God would talk with Moses face to face in the tent of meeting. In fact, that's what's being talked about even here and later on when it talks about Moses' face would shine whenever he would come out of that tent of meeting because he had been in the presence of God. That intimate, personal relationship that Moses sustained with the people, and to a lesser degree that the people then would sustain with God if he would be with them and be in their midst as they go to Canaan, God is saying, that's over with. I'm not going to do that. So Moses, you just go on to Canaan. You take the people. My angel will see to it that you have the land, but you're not going to have any personal relationship with me. My presence will not go with you. That's powerful. Look at what Moses says. Verse 12, then Moses said to the Lord, see, you say to me, bring up this people. But you yourself have not let me know whom you will send with me. You said you'd send some angel with me. You haven't even given me any further instructions about that. I don't even know what you're talking about doing or who it is that's going to help me. Moreover, you have said, I have known you, Moses, by name, and you have also found favor in my sight. You've said that I've found favor in your sight and that you've known me by name. Now, therefore, I pray you, if I have found favor in your sight, let me know your ways that I may know you, so that I may find favor in your sight. Consider, too, that this nation is your people. You see what Moses is saying? Lord, I want to have a relationship with you. I want to know you. And you're talking about sending me to Canaan with somebody else, an angel of yours that's going to take us there. And yet you've said that I have favor with you. I want to know you and your ways, Lord. He's saying, please come with us. I don't want to go there without you. Please come. Verse 14, God responds. And he said, my presence shall go with you, and I will give you rest. So the third conversation, really verses 14 through 17. Moses finally has convinced God to completely and totally forgive the people and make things as they were before. And God now says, yes, Moses, I will go with you to the promised land. My presence shall go with you, and I will give you rest. Then Moses said to God, if your presence does not go with us, do not lead us up from here. It's almost like Moses is wanting to make sure God's not going to change his mind. If you're not going to go up there and have your presence with us, then I don't want to go. We don't want to go. For how then can it be known that I have found favor in your sight, I and your people? Is it not by your going with us so that we, I and your people, may be distinguished from all the other people who are upon the face of the earth? It's like Moses is trying to emphasize, please, Lord, really do go with us. The Lord said to Moses, I will also do this thing of which you have spoken. For you, Moses, have found favor in my sight, and I have known you by name.
I'll go with you, Moses.
Folks, this is what the rest of the book of Exodus is then trying to emphasize to us. The rest of the book of Exodus then concludes with Moses coming back down the mountain with new tablets of the Decalogue to symbolize that God now has indeed restored the Mosaic covenant. And the last chapters of Exodus, that last section of Exodus, talks about the people finally building the tabernacle, the instructions of which God had shown Moses during those 40 days when he was atop the mountain when they were building the golden calf. So the book of Exodus ends with the tabernacle of God completed so that God now has a dwelling place and he will travel with this people to the promised land. His presence will be with them. The Mosaic covenant has been restored. They are going to be a special and unique people, different from all the other nations of the world. All of that has now been something that God has agreed to because of the pleas and the intercession of Moses. And it's really a remarkable thing. What are some lessons that we glean from all of this? I think, first of all, we learn some things about God, a lot of things about God, but to me, the thing that we learn about God that just especially stands out is this point right here. God takes sin personally. Doesn't God seem real human throughout all this material? In fact, that kind of bothers people. You know, sometimes we're bothered by certain sections of God's Word like this where God is presented as if He's so human. He reacts emotionally the way that we react. He says things that we might say if we were upset and angry at someone who had wronged us egregiously. And sometimes I think that bothers people, and they even have verbalized to me in the past, well, I just don't understand. God is not man. God is supposed to be greater than us. Why is God taking all this so personally and so emotionally? Well, I wish you'd just stop and think about that. What does that tell you about God? Yes, He's great. Yes, He's supreme. His magnificence is just beyond our comprehension. But folks, don't ever, ever, ever so make God such a transcendent being that in your mind you forget He's a real person. He's a real person. And He's got feelings and emotions. And when His people wrong Him, violate His commandments, that's not just some static law here that, the people violated that one, as if somehow it doesn't affect Him personally. No, it's just the opposite. It affects God personally when we sin against Him, when we rebel against Him, just like it would affect us as a parent if our child just rebelled against us and shook his fist at us and said, I don't want to do what you want. I hate you and all that kind of thing. That affects us emotionally. That's not a sign of weakness. That's a sign of personhood. And God is a person. He's a person. And sin affects Him. Now somebody says, well, but didn't God, this omniscient God who knows the future and all that, didn't He know ahead of time before Moses even said any of these things to Him? Didn't He know that He was going to completely forgive them and reestablish the Mosaic Covenant? Didn't He know the future and what He was going to do and all that? Well, I would assume yes. But this whole scenario is depicted here so that we can understand, even though God is so great and so transcendent, He's still a person. And it affects Him personally when we do those things that are in violation of His will. In Micah chapter 6, God says, what have I done to you, O Israel? Just the way that a human being would cry out to somebody who is so mistreating them, even though you've done nothing to wrong that person or nothing to hurt them, and yet they treat you in such a despicable way. What have I done to you? And that's exactly what God says. What have I done to you, O Israel? Why are you treating me this way? Folks, that's the way God is when you and I sin against Him. That's how it affects Him. I think one reason why we tend not to think about God as being a real person with real emotion and real feelings is because He doesn't seem very real to us because we don't talk to Him in prayer very much. Tell you what, people that pray to God regularly and frequently and just all the time are talking with God and talking with God, they are the ones who recognize God's a real person. They tend to recognize that and appreciate that a lot more. But I tell you what, here's a passage of Scripture that needs to help us see that. What do we learn about Moses? Again, several things that we could talk about. Let me just talk with you about a couple of things. In this whole incident, I think one thing we learned about Moses is that he cared so much about the people. Doesn't that just strike you? Moses' great care and concern about the people. A completely selfless kind of concern. In fact, what we see here is something that is the culmination of the way Moses had always been with the people. Earlier in the book of Exodus, we see that Moses, though he was brought up with all the wealth of Egypt, he purposely, once he had entered into those adult years, he decided, I'm going to go out and live among my people. He cared about them. And here are people who even had rejected him from the time when he first went out to try to help them, and they had continually been rejecting these things. In fact, for 40 years in the wilderness, they would reject not just God, but Moses himself. And yet what you see in this incident is representative of Moses throughout his life. He always has care and compassion upon these people. He didn't want God to make some nation to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that would be a Mosaic nation through Moses' descendants. He didn't want that. Don't destroy them and make a nation through me, Lord. Don't do that. He cared about those people. And that's the kind of intercessor that you desperately need. Someone who cares about you. Someone that really cares about you tremendously. I'll tell you something else we learn about Moses. He cared about being with God. He cared about being with God and being in God's presence a whole lot. That's the whole point of all of this. When God says, Moses, at least God said initially, I'm not going to go with you. If I went with you, I'd destroy the people on the way. They're so sinful. And Moses said, Lord, I want to be in your presence. And you say that I found favor in your eyes. I want to know you better. I want to know your ways. And I can't know your ways if you send me to Canaan and this special relationship that I've been having with you is over with. Please come. I don't want to go to Canaan if it means you're not coming too. You ever have the impression that your kids liked the gift you got them for Christmas a lot better than they like you? You ever get the impression that they care a lot more about the gift than they do about you, the giver of the gift? Moses is saying to God, Lord, if you're not going to be with me and with us in Canaan, then I don't want Canaan. I don't want that gift. If you can't be with us, what's the point? Moses cared about being with God. He cared about having God right there with him. Is that not the way that all of us should be? Isn't that the lesson that we should learn about all this? That's certainly the point that you see as you keep going in this narrative after God says to Moses, my presence will go up with you. Yes, I will. I'll grant your request, Moses. This is then the occasion when we read of Moses begging God to let me know more of you right now and let me see you and really have that intimate, closest possible relationship with you.
And that's when, and we sing songs about it, God takes Moses and puts him in the cleft of the rock, and he passes by Moses, and Moses sees him from the back, some kind of manifestation of God. I don't know exactly what it was, but the text says that Moses saw the back of God, but he couldn't see God's face because of the nature of God, the nature of man. Moses couldn't have survived it. But God gave him the most intimate and personal knowledge of God that God could possibly give him on that occasion. And he said, I'm going to continue to be with you, Moses, and I'll travel with you and the Israelites, and yes, build my sanctuary. This Mosaic covenant will be reestablished. You will be my special people, and I will dwell in your midst. And that's what God was willing to do. And that was all because Moses cared about the people so much, and he cared about being with God so much. And that's what this great section of the book of Exodus is all about. Now, I can't end this discussion this evening without noting this. You know, I told you about that great statement that the priest makes in 1 Samuel chapter 2, if a man sins against God, who can intercede for him? Well, Moses did for Israel at Mount Sinai. And throughout the wilderness wandering period. But you know who intercedes for us? Who intercedes for us now? Someone who is remarkably even greater than Moses himself. The Hebrew writer talks about that, of course, in the book of Hebrews. We've been studying that book. In Hebrews chapter 3, the Hebrew writer points out that as great as Moses was, faithful to God in all things, the Son of God, Jesus, is even greater and even more special than Moses himself. And we get to be the people of Jesus. And we're the people that Jesus cares about and who he intercedes for. In Hebrews chapter 7, this is the whole point in verse 25. Therefore, Jesus the Son is able to save forever those who draw near to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them. Moses ascended on high to Mount Sinai to intercede for the people of Israel. The Son of God, our intercessor, has already ascended to the real Mount Sinai, the real throne room of God, heaven itself, and he sat down at the right hand of God as the Son of God. As much favor as Moses had in God's eyes, the Son of God holds even greater favor. And the Hebrew writer says he's always there at the right hand of God to intercede for us who draw near to God through him. You see, folks, Jesus cares about you and me just like Moses cared about the Israelites. Jesus cares about us and cares about God and being in the presence of God. That's where he is now, in the presence of God, in a much grander way than even Moses was able to experience. And what Jesus is saying to us is that if we will be his people and follow him, he will intercede for us and continue to intercede for us so that we will one day be able to enter into the heavenly throne room of God, and we will be in God's presence forever, and we will see him face to face, not in some symbolic way like Moses did, not just see the back of God but not be able to see his face and live. No, we will be transformed and we will be able to see him in his presence, and he in our presence forever and ever and ever, because Jesus has interceded and begged God to forgive us, and God has said, even ahead of time, absolutely I will. I will listen to you, my son, and I will forgive those people of every wrong, as long as they're your people, my son, as long as they belong to you, the Son of God. Folks, we have such a great honor and privilege. Everything is ours. Don't allow anything in this world to get you down. And you be one of those people of Jesus Christ.
And don't be obstinate like the Israelites, but submit yourself to Jesus and allow Him to be your intercessor. He cares so much about us. And He wants us to be in the presence of God along with Him.
Don't you want that? Is there someone tonight who needs to respond to the gospel of the Son?
Won't you come while together we stand and sing?
Lions call sweetly, ringing over land and sea, bidding us look to round.